due particularly to Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur's exemplary character. He was well loved by everyone, and his constant preaching and his prolific writing of books. In this way, he managed to actually re-establish Krishna consciousness and give it back its respectability. So really, in essence, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur is the modern pioneer of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, actually, in some of his lectures, he explains it. Particularly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, those two, they performed that role of kick-starting again the movement, which had actually, at the time that they both appeared, had sort of stalled and gone underground a little bit. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he would later write, towards the end of his life, in one of his books, that he revealed his own identity was out of Kamalamanjari. Kamalamanjari is the assistant gopi of Ananda Manjari. Ananda Manjari, of course, is Radharani's younger sister. So, Ananda Manjari is a very, very prominent, one of the most prominent of all the gopis. And in her expanded forms, she actually appears as the wife of Lord Balaram, Varuni and Revati, and they in turn again appeared as Janana and Vasudha, Devadasi, the wives of Lord Nityananda. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur was the assistant of his Kamalamanjari, assistant to Ananda Manjari, the younger sister of Srimati Radharani. So he is such a very, very elevated resident of the spiritual world. Nityananda, who appeared in this world simply to push on the Krishna consciousness movement, such a powerful personality. He has such a powerful influence, which will last for as long as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is known. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his influence will be very powerfully felt. So, so it's very interesting that in the prayers also, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is described as the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's very significant that he, his disappearance day is on the disappearance day of Giradhara Pandit Goswami, who was considered to be also the personification of the energy of the Lord in the form of none other than Srimati Radharani, who was Giradhara Pandit. There is also another personality called Giradhara Das, who is an incarnation of the bodily lustre of Srimati Radharani. So actually Srila Prabhupada says that Giradhara Pandit is simultaneously an incarnation of Srimati Radharani and Lalita Devi. And so Gadadhar, of course, represents the those Vaishnavas who are his followers are considered to be manifestations of the internal spiritual potency of Lord Krishna. So we have the Panchatattva. Those who are followers of Srivas Acharya, they are generally considered to be Jiva Tattva, the Tattva Shakti, whereas those who are intimately related to the Gadadhar Pandit are considered to be the internal potency of the Lord. So it's described that there's a Sri Damodar described that Srivas Thakur is the shelter of the pure name. So when one wants to chant the holy name of the Lord purely, one takes shelter of Srivas Thakur. Advaita Charita is the shelter of Pancharatriki Vidhi. So when one wants to become well situated in deity worship, and chanting the Gayatri Mantra and what have you, then one takes shelter of Gadadharas Pandit. Whereas Gadadhar Pandit is the shelter of Baba. So as one chants the pure name, by the mercy of Srivas and Radha Acharya, and one wants to rise to the position, to the platform of ecstatic emotions, the one takes shelter of Gadadhar Pandit. And Lord Nityananda is the shelter of pure love of God or Krishna Prema. Yeah, go on. So when one wants to become elevated to pure love of God, then one takes shelter of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the shelter of rasa, the mellows of ecstasy. As we know, on the platform of prema, then that rasa or transcendental mellows are churned in that ocean of prema. And but that is tasted only by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Gadadhar Pandit, of course, his father, Gadadhar Pandit, his guru was Pundarik Vidyaniri. And Pundarik Vidyaniri was the father of Srimati Radharani in the spiritual world, or is the father of Srimati Radharani. When Gadadhar Pandit first met Pundarik Vidyaniri, he actually thought that he was just an ordinary pounds and shillings man, as Srila Prabhupada says, and he wasn't very much impressed. But later, by different transcendental arrangements, he understood that he was a very, very elevated Vaishnava, and he accepted him as his guru. So, in this way, we can see that in this line of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that if one wants to actually enter into the conjugal relationship with Krishna, then we take shelter ultimately of personalities like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who are very much immersed in that mood in this world, and of course in the spiritual world. Generally those devotees, as we described, who follow Gadadhar Pandit, they are Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastimes, he used to, when he was in the absorbed in the mood of the gopis, conjugal rasa, he would associate with persons like Gadadha Pandit, Swarup Damodara, Jagadananda Pandit, because they were immersed in that conjugal relationship with Krishna themselves, and they would enhance Lord Chaitanya's mood and feelings and ecstasies. Whereas those who were particularly associated and followers of Lord Nityananda Mahaprabhu, generally, they were either in the mood of parental relationship or friendship, servitorship, or even neutrality with Krishna. So these are the different moods. So Srila Bhaktivinoda before was very much absorbed in the mood of conjugal rasa. Of course, in the beginning, Srila Bhaktivinoda before, you know, he has such a very unusual pastime because he appeared like a very much a conditioned soul in many, many respects. Throughout the course of his life, he suffered a lot of illness, many, many different illnesses that played havoc with him, made it very, very difficult for him to perform his duties, so-called material duties or spiritual duties, and yet he accomplished so much. One of the significant things that we can learn from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura is that although he was a grihastha with a very, very large family and very heavy responsibilities as later, at first as a teacher, later as a magistrate, also as a superintendent of the Jagannath Puri temple, so he had a career which took up for most people just to pursue such a career and maintain it. There is usually no time left. You see people, you know, these days, they, you know, if they want a good career, they have to be prepared to work long hours, you know, long after the office is shut, take the work home with them and what have you. And then, of course, when he got home, he had many, many children, financial responsibilities to maintain them. He also looked after his mother and grandmother after their partners died. So he had huge responsibilities, suffered a lot of illnesses, headaches and dysentery and blood poisoning and trouble with his eyes and boils and some, actually when he was a little child, right from the beginning, when he was a little child, the nanny was carrying him down the stairs and he bit his tongue. He had a scar right through his life where he cut his tongue very severely. There was always something like that. Apart from that, there was also a lot of sorrow, apparent sorrow, because his two older brothers died, his two younger sisters died, his father died, many of his relatives died, and of course when they died, their fortunes were then plundered, which left Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura sort of looking after the various affairs of relatives and his own family and trying to maintain his career. So he had, the cards were really stacked against him. One would think, oh, because he had so much difficulty, maybe he must have had some bad karma or something like that. That's for one who has no real understanding of the nature of the Nitya Siddha, the residence of the spiritual world, it can appear like that. But actually, it's very much like the Pandavas. That the Pandavas actually went through so much difficulty, more difficulty than many, many devotees. Because Krishna wanted to show the world that his devotees, they are, they can undergo the most severe difficulties, which no one else can go through, and they will not lose their faith. They, in all circumstances, they remain gloriously attached to Krishna, and ultimately they become, you know, very victorious. So in the same way that the Pandavas suffered in many different ways, and we also see in the Ramayana there's so much tragedy. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur also, his life was like that. But ultimately he goes to glorify him because, you know, to achieve what he did on any level, but that sort of obstacle is remarkable. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur would actually say, there was a story which we'll get to later where he risked his life in order to chastise one bogus yogi, and that yogi tried to kill him, and actually he was, there was a couple of attempts on Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur's life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur said that when I have to perform a very difficult task for Krishna, I take that difficult task as the source of my greatest happiness. So that was his mood. And Srila Prabhupada would quote that often, especially when his disciples would sometimes write some letters to him asking, oh, Prabhupada, how can I go on? You know? And of course the troubles they were facing were nothing compared to what Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur faced. But that was actually his mood throughout the whole course of his life. But, of course, in the beginning, another significant feature of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur's life is that he appeared to be very confused in the beginning about... he had, you know, apparently almost no manifestation of Krishna consciousness, almost searching, you know, for an understanding of what life was about. He, of course, because his parents and their relatives were following the worship of Kali, there was not much understanding to gain from that. He wasn't very impressed with that sort of mode of worship. Sometimes he would come across different, once he saw there was an old man dying and they were reciting the Mahabharata to that old man, so he got to hear the Mahabharata. One time at one of his schools there was a guard, one of the guards who used to be a dacoit. And the that guard used to tell him stories from the Ramayana, and then he'd go home back at home and tell his mother. Of course, his name in the beginning was Kedara, which is the name of Lord Shiva. So Kedara, he would go home and he would tell his mother. And his mother, actually, she was quite happy that his son was hearing the Ramayana, so she would give some gifts to give to the gatekeeper, and he would take the gifts to the gatekeeper, and the gatekeeper would tell him more stories. Actually, that gatekeeper told Bhaktivinoda Kaur that previously he was a dacoit. One day they did a raid, and in that raid he accidentally cut his own guru's head off with his sword. And ever since then he began to chant the holy name of the Lord. That was sort of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur getting some impression about the holy name of the Lord as a deliverer. You know, very powerful ways of delivering those who are very fallen, very sinful. Also, one time Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he was going through an orchard and eating the little apples there, and there was reputed to be a ghost in that orchard, and he became very scared and he left. And there was one woman, she was a practiced tantra, and there was a lot of people practiced tantra or sorcery in those days. And she told him though that if you chant the name of Ram, that no ghost will stay. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he started chanting the name Ram, and he felt his confidence immediately grow. So then he used to purposely go out at dusk, you know, around the back streets and that, chanting the name of Ram, and he felt completely protected. In fact, there was actually some ghost in a particular place where people were very fearful to go, and he actually went there and chanting Ram, 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 and he actually made that ghost leave. So in this way, he was getting some association, introduction to the holy name of the Lord, but he really had no spiritual understanding of the philosophy of how the Lord is not different from his name, or the, you know, where the chanting fits in with religious principles and what have you. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he studied in school, and he was always, right from the very beginning, even from the age 2, he was very, very scholarly. When he was about 2 years old, in fact, his father had actually been away from home for many years because there was some legal wrangling over some land, family land. Anyway, one day, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur was about 2 years old, was looking at a crow in a tree, and he recited some, sonnet, a verse, a poem that he actually just made up on the spot, in essence saying, you know, "Move over, crow, my father's coming," like that. And a woman heard him say that. She said, "Oh, your father will come home." And a couple of days later, his father actually came home. And when he went to school, he actually he studied English and mathematics, reading, writing, and what have you. And especially with his reading and writing and his use of the English language, he actually became first. He was, you know, when there was an examination, he would actually always pick up the first prize. And so he started to become a little bit famous even as a very young child. And it actually, he recalled that it actually went to his head, and because it went to his head, because everyone was glorifying wherever he would go, and therefore his grades started to drop down. And then because his grades started to drop down, his teachers started chastising him, and envious other envious children started harassing him. So then his father forbid him from accepting any praise, any further praise. He was so harassed at school that he didn't really want to go back. He used to feign sickness, and sometimes he was sick. Sometimes he drank castor oil, so he didn't have to go. He looked like he was sick. His teachers were very mean. There was one teacher who would often use the cane, and this teacher would also encourage the other students to also inflict punishment on each other. They thought, "Oh, son of the student, oh, this one's a bad boy." You inflict some punishment on him. So it was a really heavy type of a school, and the teacher would encourage them to. They would sometimes have mock court sessions, and they would reenact them. And in those reenactments, they would actually punish someone. So they were just a school kid reenacting, but someone would end up getting their face slapped or their ears pulled or something like that. And that teacher, so in order to, therefore, because he was so mean, all the kids, they tried to bribe him, if they could bring a little something from home, and maybe you won't get the cane today, or the slap, So one day, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he brought from his home a jackfruit. He'd stolen it from his home to give to the teacher so he wouldn't get whacked that day. Anyway, his family found out, and his elder brother, and they became really furious. So his elder brother came to the school with a machete, to get the to get the teacher who is so angry. And because when the teacher got found out, he said, "Oh, well, you know, just keep stealing these, make it a little bit smaller so no one notices." But anyway, back to Nathakur, he took that machete off his shoulder. But anyway, that teacher left that same day and he moved on elsewhere. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he studied various, he got an introduction to Christian philosophy and the Muslim philosophy and, the impersonalist understanding of Vedic philosophy. When he was actually 11 or 12 or something like that, as we described, many his older brothers and sisters had passed away, his father had passed away, a lot of tragedy, and the family fortunes had diminished greatly. But at one time his uncle came, and he was a great scholarly luminary from Calcutta, and many of his associates were Rabindra Tagore and certain personalities who are still famous today for their philosophies. And they were very much into the Ramahan. There was a person called Ramahan who created the Brahmoism movement. Have you heard of that, Mahatma? Brahmoism? Brahmoism was the Indians, the intellectual Indians of their time, they, especially in this Brahmoism movement, they wanted to basically relegate the study of the Vedas, the Purans and what have you to, you know, ancient history. They thought it was, they had no faith in the scriptures. Although they followed Shiva scriptures, which sort of made them look a little bit foolish. You know, people criticise them. You don't follow scripture, you choose one that you will follow. But anyway, they wanted down with the caste system, down with the Vedas, and that. And they wanted to make Indians accept, although they were Indians, they wanted to make other Indians accept British ways, Christian ways, and what have you, and although, you know, there was some impersonalism as well, there was some impersonal pain. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he associated with such persons, he got to read and study all the different, you know, philosophers, very famous philosophers of the world, and again, you know, the various religions and what have you. And he was well known for, he was in various debating clubs and what have you. Actually, one day his teacher said to him, you know, although, because even at that stage, sometimes Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur would, you know, speak and, you know, very impressively on philosophy and what have you. And his teacher said that, you know, what benefit is all this philosophy to mankind? And it actually struck Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur that it's a fact, you know, there's all this highfalutin philosophy that, you know, what good am I actually doing for anyone? At about that stage, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he said, at one time, you know, I was confused. At one time I thought, this world is unreal, God is real, and perhaps I am God. So, you know, later on, Srila Prabhupada, one of Prabhupada's disciples asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, is that true? That, you know, there was some, like he was an impersonalist at some stage. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. He explained to me, you know, he actually also gave the example of Sukadeva Goswami, because when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, who we know as, you know, a Rasika devotee, absorbed in the mellows of, you know, love of God. Before that, he actually remained within the womb of his mother for 16 years, absorbed in the Brahman. So, you know, we shouldn't conclude. It's also interesting that one disciple started asking Srila Prabhupada, he was saying that, you know, when we accept the spiritual master, the Acharya, do they have to be a pure devotee? And of course Srila Prabhupada knew what he was getting at, that you know, you get such personalities as Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, who were previously impersonalists and obviously appear not to be a pure devotee. So Srila Prabhupada was quite angry, you know, with that question, you know, what sort of a nonsense question. Of course, you know, the spiritual master has to be a pure devotee, but we shouldn't consider their past. And he gave the example that it's like saying, you know, a child will go up to their mother and say, "Oh, mother, you know, when you were young, you were naked. So why are you putting on clothes now?" It's the same ridiculous philosophy that you know, previously you were looking at various philosophies and impersonalism. Now you're a pure devotee preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, is that correct? Can you do that? Of course you can. So in the same way that you know, a little child in the beginning they're naked. But when they're older, they put on clothes. What's to stop them? That's because they're in their, you know, position, right? They're situated, and we don't consider their past. Well, how dare you put on clothes? Previously, you run around naked. You know, what sort of shame is this? So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, of course, at that stage there was also a lot of war in India throughout his life. Because the British East India Company, they moved in somewhere around about probably 1808 or something, and so there was fights between the British, the Muslims, and the Indians. So. That is some of the early life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur. You can see his one of the things which is very common, of course, in Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur's books is that when he wrote his books, he always wrote in such a way that he was actually attracting people from all philosophies. And also taking them, you know, to a higher level of consciousness. He understood what they're thinking, what the limitations are in their thinking, and what they need to know to progress. Because he'd actually studied all these various philosophies. So the Bhaktivinoda Kaur was very accommodating in that. Although he helped people to progress from their limited understanding, he wasn't, you know, very condescending or very critical at all of anyone. For instance, you know, with the tenets of Lord Jesus, he said, "Love thy Lord with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and serve your fellow man." They're the tenets. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur actually he wrote one book, To Love God, something like that, where he explained that those principles that Lord Jesus gave as the essence of his religion actually encapsulate the same Vaishnava principles that we follow. To love God with all thy heart, indicating santa ras, that you know, one should actually have an attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up one's attachment to anything else in the material world. So one's heart should be with God, and not with anything else in the material world. So that is Asanta Ras, that is the symptoms of Asanta Ras. Love thy Lord with all thy heart, love thy Lord with all thy mind, means to love the Lord with the mind, that is Dasi Ras. We shouldn't just come to the point of knowledge about God, but that knowledge should actually lead us to activity based upon love. So we should love the Lord with our mind. We shouldn't just have some dry philosophical understanding of God and not doing anything about it. If we understand God, then we should love Him. So love the Lord with our mind, love the Lord with our knowledge. Love thy Lord with all thy with thy soul, which is sakuras or friendship, become confidentially intimately related with the Lord, and through one's soul experience communion of a very confidential and intimate friendly way with the Lord. Serve thy Lord with all thy strength. He was explaining that indicates that one should one should not be fearful that by surrendering to the Lord that one loses one's independence or freedom or somehow becomes a slave in that sense. But love thy Lord with all thy strength means that by your own free will serve God, and by your free will and independence, put all your energy into that, and love your fellow man, look after your fellow man, which he called Vatsali Ras, where in order to love one's fellow man, one has to see a common father of all living entities, which is slightly different to the Vatsali Ras that we appreciate of a higher level, where actually the devotee takes the position as the maintainer or the protector of God in the parental relationship. But then Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur then added Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's extension to the philosophy to help the Christians to go one step more, so they can appreciate, well, what is Krishna consciousness offering? What is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement offering? Everything that is there is love thy Lord with all thy heart, mind, soul, strength, love thy brother in this way, but more. And then he explained the conjugal rasa, where one can actually become an intimate lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, also one time there was a great debate, and different members of the Brahmoism, the Indian intellectuals trying to reject Vedic culture, Hindu culture, become British eyes and what have you, and they wanted to make the Indians accept more the philosophies of Aristotle and different philosophers like that. And then you have the Hindus who wanted to maintain the traditional values, and yet who had lost their culture. They weren't even really understanding their own culture. There was a great disturbance within the community, within many places, because of this. At this time in India, there was some trying to break away from the culture and some trying to hang on to it. And so I sort of back to Nadi Kaur, he actually gave a very famous speech, which is actually recorded in the, I think it's called the Bhagavat, it's philosophy, ethics and religion, something like that. You can buy that. In which he managed to speak philosophically in such a way that everyone was greatly appreciated his point of view and how he resolved the conflict that was building within India, and how he also presented a broader perspective of understanding the situation than what they were, any of them were situated in. He explained that actually all of them were, you know, looking from a limited perspective. And he gave the example that, you know, understanding knowledge of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Lord, is like looking at a great mountain. He's saying that some, like, you know, Plato, what have you, they're looking from the west. And some, like Vyas and Confucius, you know, they're looking from the east. And so he named, you know, the various, you know, main parties around the world, how they're looking at this great mountain from different angles of vision. But from their perspective, they have a limited vision, because they're only looking from the east, or they're only looking from the west. And of course they, in other words, and then he said, this party spirit is the destroyer of real knowledge, of, you know, cultivation of knowledge of the Absolute Truth. Party spirit meaning, as long as we think that only in my religious books is there real knowledge, as long as a person has that understanding, they can actually never understand the Absolute Truth, because they will only look at it from their limited perspective. So, you know, therefore, you know, of course, we appreciate the Bhagavad Gita, because it is coming from God's perspective. And as Srila Prabhupada points out in the very beginning, that what you will find in all the different philosophies and religions of the world, you'll find that in the Bhagavad Gita, but more. So, Bhagavad Gita is in its own category, in that it is not looking from just one particular limited aspect. It is actually looking from God's aspect, and therefore you find all the other philosophies are there within the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, this was his preaching, and he wrote many, many books which were very satisfying, whether they were British reading them, whether he would send, you know, his books all over the world. In fact, the year Srila Prabhupada was born, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura sent a book which the life and precepts of which contained the life and precepts of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he sent that to places like Canada and what have you. And in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, our teachings of Lord Chaitanya, there is a prologue which is actually from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's book, which describes the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, in the course of his life, he wrote over 100 books. It's so prolific. And if you read some of them, if you read one of them, you might think, how in the course of an entire lifetime would you gain such deep and profound, all-encompassing knowledge just to write a book like this? And yet there are so many, just one after the other, you know. He's just empowered. And he also, you know, he published. He published books, and he also published the books he found when he wanted to find. Someone told him that, you know, the Vaishnava philosophy, that, you know, you're getting some taste for, that is found in Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which describes the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, it took him 7 years to find a copy of that. You know, throughout the course of his life, he actually published most of the very important prominent works of the six Goswamis, the followers of the six Goswamis, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, Narottam Das Thakura, Baladeva Vidyabhusan, their various books, various Puranas and the Mahabharata and what have you, published so many books in without any of the nonsense philosophies, of course, and quite often with his own commentaries to give the proper, you know, perspective of those liturgies. So now, how does so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, I mentioned once before that his grandfather, paternal grandfather, was a great mystic. He called for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, and he said that, you know, I am about to leave my body, I will leave my body on such and such a time. As yogis can do that, they can choose a particular time, or know the particular time that they will leave their body. And but when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura saw his grandfather who was quite elderly, but he actually looked very healthy and very strong. He had a slight fever, that was about it. And so he thought, maybe I should go. You know, it doesn't look like you're actually going to pass away at any time in the next decade or something. And he said, no, you must stay. He stayed, and his grandfather put a cot in a bed in the courtyard, and he sat on that bed, and he, you know, in a yogi position, and he just chanted constantly the holy names of the Lord. And then, just about before he was about to leave his body, he said to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura that, I want you to visit all the various temples in Orissa, because that's where he was, so the Jagannath Puri temple and what have you. He predicted, he said, I think it was him who made the prediction, but your native village will be destroyed. Nearly everyone in that village will die from disease, and you will become a great, you know, luminary in Vaishnava. Like that. And then his father, then sitting, chanting the holy name of the Lord, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, saw him. He burst through the top of his head, as yogis do, and left his body. it's interesting that that prediction about the village, that there actually was a cholera outbreak, and there was one tantric yogi who had actually cured Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura of various illnesses. He was quite powerful. And he said that he would help to rid the village of the illness, and so he let loose this goat, some magic goat, in the village. But actually, the goat ended up evidently spreading the cholera further. You know, so the goat ended up. So then they all ended up blaming that yogi. You know, you're supposed to cure us, but you ended up killing everybody. So. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, gradually he took various exams where he became a second grade teacher, then a sixth grade teacher, and then gradually he became a deputy magistrate and what have you. And he was also posted as the superintendent of the Puri temple. While at the Puri temple, it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura who literally he established the extremely punctual mode of deity worship that they follow. It was him. He regulated it right down to the minute. Now, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura never used to go anywhere without a stopwatch. He used to, you know, everything he did to precision timing. You know, at a certain time in the morning you do this, at a certain time in the morning you do this. He's very, very regulated, carried his stopwatch. So he actually, there was actually a king in the, back in the course started preaching Krishna consciousness. He would be in the part of the temple and he would preach the Vaishnava philosophy. One day, The king came in with about 50 of his entourage, and they were a bit noisy. And Shiv Bhaktivinoda Kaur pulled him up and said that, you know, outside you may be a king, but here, you know, you're in the presence of the King of Kings. And that king understood, and he actually offered his obeisances to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and was very careful not to create that offence. Now, I'm not sure whether it's the same king, but the king of that area, the king of Puri, he once misappropriated about 80,000 rupees from Lord Jagannath's kitty. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to know of this. And it was because of that that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he upgraded the deity worship so that there were 52 offerings to Lord Jagannath every day. Very opulent. And because of that, it actually, that the king's entire treasury reduced down to, you know, practically nothing. So that king became so envious and angry at Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur that he wanted to kill him, he wanted him dead. So I think it was actually within the temple, he got about 50 brahmanas, and there was a big yajna performed, and they performed it over the course of 30 days. And the yajna was performed so that at the end of the 30 days, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not dead. And on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he learned about it, but he didn't take any action. But on the 30th day, at the exact time that they put the last oblation of ghee into the fire, the king's son dropped dead. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also, there's a very famous story where he, one very famous yogi, rascal, Bhishikishen. There were many rascals, but this one was quite prominent, quite famous. He claimed to be Mahavishnu. He was in the Atibari sect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, he came in the sampradaya of Jagannath Das. Jagannath Das was actually associated with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Jagannath Das, "I want you to go and associate with Haridas Thakur and offer him service." But this Jagannath Das didn't do it. And because of that, because he neglected the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became implicated in Mayavadi philosophy. So in this line, there were sort of yogis with impersonal sort of views. So anyway, they were called the Atibaris, or those, you know, being rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this Bhishikishen, very powerful yogi, you know, he could manifest fire coming from his locks of hair and sparks coming from his eyes and what have you. So he used to, people were very, very fearful of him, he set up his own temple in the jungle, you know, a little away from the Jagannath temple. And the kings, the various, you know, rulers of the villages and what have you, they would send him gifts and bribes so that he wouldn't be angry with them. And they would even send him girls and what have you. They were, you know, extremely fearful, because he said, "I am God, I am Vishnu, and within a certain time, very shortly, I'm going to kill all the Europeans, including the King of England. They'll all be killed by me. And then India will once again be ruled by, you know, the Hindus." That was his plan. So actually, when some of the villagers understood that he'd actually, you know, had sex with some very respectable lady in the name of, you know, Rasa Leela, they, you know, approached the government, the British government, who then deputed Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was a very sensitive issue, because this person had thousands of followers, you know, who actually thought he was God. So therefore you can imagine, you know, if someone goes to arrest him or says even a slight criticism, you've got mobs of people wanting to kill you. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he went there, and of course he approached this yogi. He had many police officers with him, but they were really scared as well, and they sort of stayed back. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he said, "Why don't you come and live in Puri? Here you are out in the jungle, you know, why don't you come and live in Puri? There are so many pilgrims who will come daily, and life will be so much better." And he said something to the effect that, no, I will not go there. And he made some comment that, God is not in Puri, God is here, I am God. What you'll find in Puri is just a slab of wood. Of course that was directed towards Lord Jagannath, he wasn't impressed. So, because Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, immediately hearing that, he understood this person has to be punished because he's for so many different reasons. And he asked him to come in, which he wouldn't do. And that yogi, when Bhaktivinoda Kaur first arrived there, that yogi, he said, "I know who you are, I know you're there, Bhaktivinoda Kaur, and I know all about you. Forget that mission. Soon I will rule and you can be my governor." And they say he's trying to bribe him. And then he actually handed a leaf down, passed it on to Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur. And on that, everything that yogi just said was written on that leaf in beautiful poetry. And he had all these different mystic powers. So anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he came back in the morning and he asked his yogi, "Now you get on this bullock cart, because you wanted to arrange a bullock cart, you get on this bullock cart, I'm arresting you, you come back with me to Puri." And he wouldn't go, but he actually became really, really angry. And when he became angry, the flames just started shooting out from his hair, and the crowd dispersed and were running everywhere, and the sparks were coming out of his eyes. As Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he wasn't impressed at all, nor was he fearful, even the slightest. And he said, "You must come with me. If you don't come, then I will come up there and handcuff you and whatever." And then the yogi said, "Well, because I am God, I like to fulfill the word of my devotees, so therefore I will come with you. Otherwise, you couldn't get me to come." So anyway, they got him on the cart and he handcuffed him and they drove him back to Puri, and all the way back, he's shown all sorts of different scary mystic things trying to get them to let him go, of which they didn't do. So then they locked him up in prison waiting for the court case, and he fasted for 21 days and he didn't sleep for that time either, because that's how he's developing his mystic strength. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he put many different Muslim guards, because the Hindus, of course, were terrified of the Muslims. So they thought, "Well, he's not here, guys." So anyway, when the court case came, the court case lasted for 18 days. And after about 4 or 5 days, they brought the yogi in. The yogi was coming in, but the yogi said, "If you continue this, Bhaktivinoda Kaur, great tragedy will befall you and your family. Go home now and see what is happening." So of course, late in that evening, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur went home, he saw that one of his daughters, as Prabhupada says, actually many of his family members, were actually very, very seriously ill. Although by the morning, it had subsided. Anyway, coming to the last day, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur went home, this yogi said, if you don't stop, I will kill you. You must stop. And when Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur went home that day, he got this pain in the right side of his chest, which throughout the night became stronger and stronger and stronger. And he was so uh, so ill that they had to carry him the next day into the court on a, you know, in a palanquin. But Shilabhaktivinoda Thakura's wife is, she's pleading, you know, stop, let him go, you know, what does it matter? We're all going to die. And Shilabhaktivinoda Thakura, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished. It's the thing. So then, he gave his verdict. 18 months for conspiracy against the government. 18 months in jail. So, Srila Prabhupada says that he actually ordered some of the men to cut the hair off this yogi, because in order to confine him they had to do that, because yogis can escape and use their powers to get out of situations. So no one could do it. The Prabhupada says Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura himself did it. He got a pair of scissors and he cut all his hair off, and as soon as he did that, that yogi just fell on the floor and so weak that he couldn't even walk, couldn't move. And throughout that whole trial, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura was actually preaching to him, you know, you give up your nonsense, you're not God, you're an ordinary living entity, and for goodness sake, eat something like this. But he wouldn't do it. But anyway, they put him in jail. But when all, because there were so many followers, when they saw, well, here's God, you know, they, what sort of God is this? They cut off his hair and now he's no longer God. So immediately, you know, so many followers are just, you know, oh, he's not God, he was a rascal. Now he's going to jail. So they put him in jail, and after about 3 months he took poison and took his own life and died. And after that, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura actually, he arrested many others. He went and got Brahma and Shiva, and you know, they all got thrown in jail. Yeah. Anyway, time's getting on. There's so much more we could say. We've only really just touched the surface. But maybe if anyone has any questions at all about anything we've said, or something. I just what's that? About the Panchapatha. Oh yeah, was by Sri Damodara Goswami, and I believe it's in Jagadananda's Pramivadatta. Yeah, I didn't write down the reference here, but it's from Srut Damodara, his teachings to Jagadananda Pandit, I think, which is in Prambhavata. I just want to maybe describe a little bit about his departure from the world, considering that it is his disappearance day, just very quickly before we go to Prasadam.
We are fasting.
Okay, alright, so we've got an extra few minutes.
You want to go for Sharanagati?
What's that?
Sharanagati.
Sharanagati, yes, that is one of his books. He, of course, established the Nam Hada program, which was very much in the mood of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He established that in. He had a centre in Calcutta which was called the Bhakti Bhavan, the marketplace of the Holy Name, the market of devotion, the market of bhakti. And in Navadvip, Godrumadvip, he had another ashram which was called Svananda Saravi Kunj. He started the Nam Hada, which is that is the marketplace of the Holy Name, which is based very much upon the mood of Lord Nityananda. He wrote very famous. He detailed in the course of his lifetime, by his personal preaching, he established over 500 Nam Hada centres. You know, like we have devotees have, you know, a couple of different programs here and there. And he established about 500 by his personal preaching. And he also he discovered the lost birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yeah. So that's a very famous event also. And after he actually saw a vision when he was sitting with his son and another friend, and he looked to the north in Navadvipa, and he saw this vision of this great mansion just, you know, engulfed in light. And you know, his son also saw it. And you know, the next morning when he looked to that direction, he saw this huge big palm tree. And so he went there. He asked the villagers, and the villagers, you know, described it. Well, actually, this is supposed to be the place of, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth. There were so many Tulsi plants. He then went into various maps and, you know, scriptures and what have you, and realized that indeed that was the yoga pit. And when he was there, he actually had another vision of that great Vaishnava city. So then at some stage, then he, to confirm that, he asked Jagannath Das Babaji, who at that stage was something like maybe 120 years old or something like that, and he used to be carried around in a little basket on top of his disciples' shoulders, because he was, you know, couldn't walk, couldn't see. Well, that's what we're led to believe. Anyway, when he got there and was brought there, he immediately jumped out of his basket and started jumping up and down, you know, stretching out to about 7 feet tall, and jumping up and down, hurry boy, yes, this is it, this is Lord Chaitanya, and dancing in ecstasy. So that was enough confirmation. And so then, and of course, when they were actually digging and excavating the site for the temple, because Bhaktivinoda Thakura, then he used to go around personally, knocking on everyone's door, you know, you please lend a farthing or a rupee, what have you, for the temple like that, and then he would go to the next door personally, going everywhere, you know, please. So they generated these funds to build the temple. And then when they were digging for the foundation laying ceremony, there they found the Hoksaja deity, which was actually worshipped by Jagannath Misra, who was actually the father of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that was further confirmation that the Hoksaja indeed is the actual site. So of course, then he used to be there with Jagannath Das Babaji, who was a Shiksha guru. He had Bhaktivinoda Thakura actually had a Diksha guru, Vihina something, but he was coming in the line of Janavamata. But later he neglected his Diksha guru because there was some disagreement about the position of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, and really the strong link is between Bhaktivinoda Thakura and Jagannath Das Babaji. Who he actually received, you know, proper spiritual guidance and the pure teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And towards, actually, in one of his books, in 1895, this is some of the predictions that Bhaktivinoda Thakura predicted. He said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared not just to liberate India, but all living beings, and he appeared to preach eternal religion. He said that in every town and village, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name will be known. He said very soon the Harinam will be propagated all over the world. And then he prayed, oh, when will fortunate Englishmen, Frenchmen, Russian, Germans, Americans, we can add Australian, take up banners, mridangas and kartal and raise kirtan in the streets. Oh, when fair-skinned devotees join the Bengalis chanting Jai Sachinanda. And then he said, a personality will soon appear to preach the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and move unrestrictedly all over the world with Lord Chaitanya's message. And of course we know that that refers to Srila Prabhupada. I remember the first time I went to Mayapur, and of course you just get that, you know, when you see devotees from all over the world and you just have these massive big kirtans and you can just see this, you know, manifestation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in a seed form, but it'll be like that, you know, all over the world, just brothers and sisters coming together to chant in ecstasy and peace. Such a wonderful movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually one time, a couple of times in Prabhupada's conversations and lectures, in reference to that quote there, the Prabhupada would say, oh, some say that person is me, you know, but I'm supposed to be that person like that. You know, there were some comments. Otherwise, who else do we know, you know, who moved about the world unrestrictedly and, you know, carrying the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because I was Srila Prabhupada. So that was quite an astounding prediction, and that's coming true. So towards the end of his life, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wanted to take Babaji initiation. Babaji, of course, is beyond the sannyas stage, where one renounces, you know, any association with any ashrams, you know, vanas and ashrams, takes Babaji and just becomes completely absorbed internally. Now, at that stage, they can give up the preaching in one sense, although they're preaching by their example, they become internally absorbed in meditating upon, you know, the eternal pastimes of Radha Krishna. So he asked Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He saw Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He used to go down to the boat and cross the river to where he lived, and he followed him one day and said, you know, you please give me Vaishya initiation. And, you know, of course, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Gaurakishore Das Babaji is an intimate friend and associate of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Gaurakishore Das Babaji used to consider Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as his spiritual guide, and he would go there and hear, you know, Krishna consciousness from him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he would consider Gaurakishore Das Babaji, you know, his dear friend, to be, you know, that you'll be my spiritual master, you will guide me, and, you know, Babaji like this. So, but they were contemporaries. Even though in our disciplic succession you have Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he wouldn't initially, he got on his boat and he, you know, went over to the other side. So another time, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he understood Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he had mystic potencies. He could actually understand, you know, what was going on in so many different places. He was a little bit all-knowing. And he understood Bhaktivinoda Thakur was coming, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was coming to look for him. So he went to the marketplace, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and there was one prostitute, and he got on her veranda and he sat there and he hid there and he started chanting Hare Krishna. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur looked all over and he couldn't find him, and so he went back. And then after he'd gone back, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was seen, you know, laughing, you know, hysterically. And someone says, you know, what is funny? He said, oh, I just tricked Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He couldn't find me because I'm hiding here in the last place he would look. So anyway, after some time, he managed to convince him, and he accepted that he would initiate him. So in the presence of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted the Babaji initiation, and he was given the you know, Bahivesha, the, you know, begging cloth of Jagannath Das Babaji, who had actually passed away, and he accepted his cloth and accepted the Babaji initiation. And then for about 4 years, I believe it was, he pretty much locked himself in his Bhakti Bhavan without seeing anyone, and he just he appeared to be in a state of paralysis, but he was just completely absorbed in the pastimes of Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna. And in 1914, he left his body when the sun was in the southern course, exactly at noon. So, any other questions or comments? Who are they in Sri Sri? Well, Varuni and Ravati, Balaram's wives, that is their spiritual identity. In Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, or Lord Nityananda's pastimes, they are Janavi and Yasuda, those same two personalities, eternal personalities. They are both considered to be the combined. They are both considered to be incarnations of Ananda Manjari.
Went back to the Mozart board with his grandfather when he left his body, and he saw him crack out of the top of his head. What would have been seen?
Would have saw his, some this bursting.
She could have a light or explosion, or was it even a subtle realm in his mind's eye? Or?
No, it was a scene, some little
parts or
something bursting. Was it something burst from the top of the head?
Physically?
Yeah. Yeah, from my understanding, he actually saw this.
Will you see his spiritual form?
Well, it depends. It depends on the yogi. Srila Prabhupada explains that if a yogi is going to a higher planetary system within this universe, they leave their body with their subtle body. So, whereas if they are going back to the spiritual world directly, they also leave their gross body and their subtle body. Now, whether the subtle body comes out of the gross body and then the soul leaves the subtle body at that stage, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But because he was a Vaishnava chanting the holy names of the Lord at the moment of death, the grandfather Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakura, one can assume that he was going back to the spiritual world.
The moment if he saw the spiritual form, if he saw something.
Yeah, it doesn't describe it. It's understood that he could perceive him leaving, bursting through.
Is there any particular reason that soul should come out from the head only? Is there any particular reason?
Well, generally when we die, for someone who's not a yogi, the soul will come through the anus, for those who are not yogis, out of fear. Actually, because the yogis, what they do is when they want to leave, they block all the various holes of the body, except for here, and they burst through there. If that is not done, then one, because within the body, within the heart chakra, there are various nadis, which are like pathways of which the life airs can travel with the soul. So it's from the heart chakra. I think there's something like 110 or something, and each one leads to a different destination. It's like a passage. You leave the body, you go to a certain destination, but the soul leaves. And they connect with the various nine holes of the different body. But the yogi will block those so that they don't go to any of those other destinations. To, you know, unless one has that capability as a yogi to leave through the top of the head, they're not qualified to actually achieve certain higher destinations. The yoga practice is not developed enough, you know, and therefore they will go to other destinations by leaving the body through other pathways. That is the yoga, the Brahmarandram. Brahmarandram, you learn all these things, right? Brahmarandram, Agya Chakra, we mentioned. Any other questions?
About this point, the Prabhupada in the purport work says that the devotee does not need to worry about the time or how he is going to give up his body, because he is so much absorbed in Krishna that at the time of death he just absorbed in Krishna.
It's interesting, because when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left his body, which is about this time of year, as we know, in some, what are we in now, July, what's the date, July 3rd, so it must be about July the 15th or 16th or something, that the sun then goes into its northern course, right? Is it? Yeah, so the sun's about to, in a week or so, the sun is about to enter the northern course, so they actually delayed putting his ashes they delayed burying his ashes until the sun went into the north, and there was a huge big festival at that samadhi ceremony for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's a big kirtan, and everyone there testified that they felt the direct presence of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So though he left his body, evidently he did for some reason, although he's a Vaishnava, it's not necessary, because the Vaishnava, you know, is can go directly back to the Supreme Lord at any time. But you know, sometimes with devotees they will actually perform activities so that others follow their example. So for instance, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's parents died, you know, he would make sure that the Shraddha ceremony was performed, although from my understanding that is not always necessary if you know, people are Vaishnavas. But you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life was one of setting an example on the level that we could understand, and therefore many of the things were done so that we can follow and understand and appreciate from some level. You know, the way he cultivated knowledge and then gradually took to bhakti yoga, which is the perfection of our knowledge, as he was describing. We shouldn't just cultivate knowledge without it having some benefit by that knowledge being used to love God. You know, knowledge without love of God has no real value. So he showed us how his knowledge gradually developed and then was offered in loving service to Krishna. So, you know, his life was exemplary in that way, almost like a step by step. You'll go through this, you'll go through this, and then you should go through this, and then you should go through this. That's what we are going through. And we can appreciate the level we're on and our realizations now and where we can go to in the next step, because we can follow his life as a grihastha, you know, as a student, as a person who's needing to maintain his family, we can follow all those things, you know. So his life was very much in that. So even, you know, his leaving his body and his samadhi being prepared when the sun went in the north, it's all, you know, so that ordinary people can follow and learn how to do the right thing. But it's not that in all circumstances it was completely necessary for someone who's obviously a resident in the spiritual world. You know, if Krishna calls one back to Godhead, it doesn't matter whether there's been any Shraddha ceremony, it doesn't matter when you left your body, it doesn't matter anything. When Krishna says, I want that soul, come back right now, there's nothing that can prevent that. Nor is there any preliminary activity that needs to be done. It's all done automatically by Krishna, instantly.
About the Christianity, Lord Jesus Christ did not mention about the modes of nature and the eating habits, because I see the Christians, they don't follow any regulations in their eatings.
There are many things that other religions and philosophies don't have a good understanding of, and what we should try to do is understand what they do know, congratulate them on that, and then help people to go to the next step. But we can only do that if we know what the next step is ourselves, and we understand this philosophy. And actually, one way to get an essence of an understanding of Krishna consciousness is through the songs, the various songs of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur. Srila Prabhupada said that the words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur are non-different from Shastra, as good as Shastra. And if you read his songs, they are so beautiful. They just, you know, the essence of philosophy is just presented in this beautiful way that you can sing, and knowledge which may take someone thousands of lifetimes to come. Is just encapsulated in this beautiful poem and very easy to understand. So that's the expertise of, you know, and the charisma and the attractiveness of someone like Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur. That instead of sitting and studying scriptures and, you know, performing austerities and what have you, Bhaktivinoda Kaur has given us this opportunity here. Here's your song, sing that and you'll go back to Godhead. Sing that, eat some bishada, you go back to Brahman. So if we do that, then we can, and then we can, then it doesn't matter what level that someone is on, you know, if they can't understand the modes of nature and Prakriti and Purush and, you know, Brahman and this and that, it doesn't matter. Just sing one of these songs back to Vinodha Kaur, eat some bishada, they're going back to Godhead anyway. And the understanding of all these things will automatically come. Srila Prabhupada says, after many, many years, one comes to the knowledge that Bhaktadeva is everything. He says there's two ways, two applications of that. One, you can actually develop over many, many years your knowledge to the point where you understand Bhaktadeva is everything, understanding that, and you can surrender. Or you can just say, well, Krishna said it, I'll accept that, and I'll surrender anyway, even though I don't have full understanding of it. Krishna said it, he's the Acharya, all the Acharyas say it, the Guru said it, I'll just accept it anyway. And he said, if you do that and practice, then by Krishna's grace, the understanding automatically comes after that. So you don't have to wait many, many lifetimes. So that's what Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur and the Acharyas, that's what they do. Here's a beautiful song. Don't wait for many, many lifetimes, and you're probably not even on the path anyway. Sing this, eat prasada, and by doing that, knowledge that Vasudeva is everything, the desire to surrender to Krishna will automatically come at that. So, in our preaching in Krishna, that's what we do. Get people to chant, dance, jaya satchinanda, jaya satchinanda, eat prasada, you know, embrace the fellow devotees from wherever they come from around the world, and in this way, Krishna consciousness, you know, it's easily put together. All right, all goes to the Prabhupada.